I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. We are composing the podcast today in the studio of St. Ephrem. It is still the Easter season, and so I am rejoicing alongside the jubilant Father Garrett Burns and the ebullient Father Drew Hoffman.
Ebullient? Hello!
That's better than jolly, right?
I guess. What does ebullient mean? Sounds like a disease. Just like...
It's what you are when you have Ebola.
Doctor, I think he's ebullient. We're not getting him back.
Got a bad case of ebullience here. Well, we are named after St. Ephrem. He's a doctor of the church. I don't know if either of you know much about St. Ephrem.
He sang and was a deacon.
He sang and he was a deacon. And that's about really all I know of him. Other than...
He died of ebullience.
Bad case of ebullience. See, this is an educational podcast,
too. It certainly is.
Everybody learns. At the Spiritual Life Center here in the diocese, we have pictures of the doctors of the church. And St. Ephrem, my devotion solely is because his picture is one of my favorites. So I don't know if you ever paid attention to it. He's bald on top, and he's got these long white wisps that like go almost out from his head. I always tell the seminarians, when I have to be less of a public figure, that's how I'm going to style my hair. Nice. I'm going to grow it out long on the side and get some gel and just kind of move it outward.
Jeez.
It's going to be a good look.
I think he might have been, at one point at a clergy conference, we started naming NBA players, assigning them to the doctors of the church who looked similar.
Nice.
I think he might have been Coach Popovich or something.
I think that's right. We thought it was going to be a lot easier than it ended up being. It ended up being a lot harder for us to do.
They all have really big beards, so there's
looking a lot of the same, and so
their Saint Francis de Sales looks a lot like Brendan Fraser.
Okay.
Who gets the guy that played Frazier on Cheers? That's not Brendan
Kelsey
Frazier.
Kelsey Grammer.
That's who I mean.
Brendan
it doesn't
Fraser
look like Brendan Fraser.
The Mummy.
Yeah, not that guy. It looks like Kelsey Grammer. But that's one of the conversations I always have on retreats out at the Spiritual Life Center during the town time. It's one of my the lives where, you know, okay, what's your favorite doctor of the church, either picture or image? So I throw that question out to you guys. We don't have the pictures here, but what's your favorite doctor of the church?
Man, I'd probably say Thérèse of Lisieux, only because she's probably the only one I've read very much of, which is pretty sad. But she's great, the little way.
She's good. She's good.
Yeah, Ignatius is for sure my answer. That's the one I've read the most.
I guess that's predictable.
Used the most. Yeah, so that was, we've talked a lot about Ignatius, so I thought that was kind of a lame answer. So the two others by far that would be also then in my list of probably top seven or eight saints would be Gregory the Great and Catherine of Siena. And Gregory the Great's Book of Pastoral Care is one of my favorite little like go-to quick chapters that are easy to read and things like that. And for being one of the smartest men of the first 1,000 years of the church, just eminently practical in his ministry. And then Catherine of Siena is just throwing lightning bolts. I mean, she's just as fiery and as powerful. And you want to talk about the church being like, I don't know, oppressive or the church has her stuff, but Catherine of Siena is like this perfect example of a woman on fire and a powerful woman, the most powerful person of the age. And her writing was a big part of that.
Catherine of Siena is kind of like the Winston Churchill of the saints. Like in that I like to admire her from afar and very important, but I would not want to work with that woman.
Oh, you would. I don't think Catherine has a lot of like bros. Like she's not just hanging out like, hey, you want to go to the movies tonight, Catherine? She's throwing fire and cutting her hair off and things of that nature.
I'm actually reading Gregory the Great's discourses right now, which is just a bunch of stories of the saints of his era and different holy people. And it cracks me up the way he's got it written is it's written as a dialogue. And so there's a monk named Peter, and Peter has all these leading questions like, would you please tell me more, Holy Father, about this? Gregory goes, hey, would you like to hear about the story of the Abbot of Mosny? Nothing would please me more than to know about that. So it's just kind of funny. But
it reminds you of the seminarians. Yeah. So they just sit at your feet and say, please,
all the time,
Father Chad.
All the time.
Tell us more.
Nothing would please us more than to hear
these random bands that you just listen to.
No, that's very true. That is the highlight of their day. I think so. I'm not a favorite person. So I guess I should preface that. I don't normally think of favorites. That's really hard for me to pick favorites. I've done it. I've picked a favorite. I'm not going to ask and not do that, but I just don't think in lines of favorites very well. That's always a hard question for me.
Who's your favorite seminarian?
He doesn't think of that.
They're all my favorites.
I love them all equally.
Why are you winking at me right now?
it's a twitch. Teresa of Avila is who I'm going to go with. I can't think of any of the other ones whose works that I have read that have had a bigger impact. Or DeSales would be close in there. So like he'd be...
I figured you'd say John of the Cross too, yeah.
I so much want it to be John of the Cross. But every time I read him, I'm like... No, this is way beyond me.
Knight's name taken from you.
I will say John of the Cross is my favorite picture in that whole room. So if you look at the pictures, he's got like a black background and just a real thin gold halo around. It's a sweet picture. So he is definitely my favorite artistic rendition in that room. But I got to go with Terry of Avila or DeSales. They're just both... Their writings have just thumped me on the head and sent me in another direction at times. So
I just recently read this guy's like a dissertation or something on John of Avila that I had not read much of, but he talks a lot about the priesthood and it was really good. Challenging.
He's one
things.
I feel like I got to read more of. Like I know he talks about the priesthood and that's about it. I really haven't read any John of Avila.
He just became a doctor in the last 10 years, right?
Yeah. He's one super of the new fresh ones. for church history. I mean, for as a doctor, yeah, because it's like him and. The Bingham.
Hildegard of Benin or whatever.
Something like that, yeah, which I know zero about. I can't even pronounce the name right.
Yeah, we're probably saying that. We're probably insulting
H of
somebody.
B is about as close as I can get to the actual name. Well, speaking of favorites, when I look at the stats on our podcast and I look at where listeners are queuing in, one of the favorites that gets picked up most often or one of the most listened to episodes is one titled Building a Relationship with God. It stands above and beyond a lot of the other episodes. And I understand that as it kind of just pointed to the fact that we're all hungering for those basic things, you know, a relationship with God, prayer. You know, the apostles asked, Lord, teach us how to pray. And it's not that they were ignorant. They just wanted to do that better. I feel like I have to remind myself of that every time I'm working on homilies because I don't want to preach the same thing over and over, but there's also this sense like, yeah, you got to keep going back to the basics. Right. It's time to preach about confession again. It's time to preach about the Eucharist again. I know I've done 10 of these, but you can't do it too much per se. But anyway, so that being one of the more popular podcasts, kind of in that light, I thought maybe today's episode, we'd spend a little bit of time just kind of talking about prayer, specifically how we do our holy hours, how we spend that time. And I want to throw in the caveat, that's not to say that this is how you should do a holy hour or even that we do this the best or that there aren't better ways about it, but just hoping that in the general discussion, maybe the listeners or one of us will hear something that we might gain from. The fact that we do holy hours on a daily basis, and most priests do, it's kind of interesting. I don't know that I really ever have that conversation with other guys. I could tell you a lot about the lives of other brother priests, but I'm like, how do they spend their holy hour?
Right.
I don't know. And maybe we spend them all the same. I really don't know. Mm-hmm. We've never had this discussion. So I don't know who wants to start with how we spend our holy hours.
Yeah, I'd like what you said first. Like the biggest thing is just do the holy hour or the holy, you know, half hour, spend some time in prayer. Like the biggest thing is just to go and do it. And then you begin to be formed in it.
I think that's an old Merton thing. What's the most important thing is take the time is what he used to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the biggest thing. Sometimes for me, just make sure that I get there.
When I was in college, one of the ways that I would do that, like, cause there was a recognition I needed to spend time in front of the Blessed Sacrament, but I wasn't really trained yet to spend a whole holy hour in prayer. I don't know if this is good, but I don't think it's bad. I used to do homework in the chapel. Like I would just say, oh God, I got a bunch of reading. I'm gonna have to sit down somewhere. Lord, I got to do this. I'm gonna do it in your presence. I don't quite know what to say to you yet, but I'm gonna do my philosophy homework here in the chapel. So I used to go at conception. I'd take a lot of homework up to the chapel and just work on it there. Again, I don't know if that, it's probably not the greatest way to spend the time, but it wasn't a bad thing at that time.
So, and like we said, like you went to do it in his presence. Like that's the biggest, like we're not just going in there to sit and rest or something. Like we are putting ourselves intentionally in the presence of God. And that's what I do probably 1,000 times in a holy hour. It's like, okay, bring myself back into the presence of God, which we always are. We know that, but like, I'm not always present to him. So to make that intentional. So I think that's honestly how I start, is just trying to bring that. Like, it can take, I don't know how long it takes, you know, maybe even 5 minutes or more of just like centering and kind of like calming down, trying to get rid of all the stuff that's been going on. I remember, it's funny, I wasn't even like, just the chapel where I did my holy hour at Kenrick. And in the first semester, they would have the new prethes in there maybe once a week. Which one, I was like annoyed at that. I was like, I just wanted to pray there. And then one day, maybe I just forgot they were going to be there. And so Monsignor Mikish was kind of leading them and what to do. And he just kept telling them, like, receive that, bind and remove this, Lord. And so I pray that a lot in those first few minutes of just, I have this meeting coming up, or I'm worried about this, or Lord, bind and remove that, to like kind of calm down. And I a lot of times use either a come Holy Spirit prayer, some form of that, or another kind of just fruit of like a seminary day of recollection. Was a woman that worked a lot with Mother Teresa, came and she kind of gave us this prayer. I don't know if Mother Teresa used it or what, but it had her image on it. And it basically just said, I am precious to you. You love me. You have called me by name. I am yours. You love me. Jesus, you love me. And to prove that, you died on the cross for me. And so I like just pray that and repeat that again 10, 20 times to like kind of get away from the world and enter in. And then now I'm in a prayerful state where I can move forward from that. So that's kind of how I start.
I'd say almost all of the same similarities, particularly when it comes to like a mantra. And we think of the mantra as like an Eastern idea, but it doesn't necessarily need to be some sort of centering prayer. And similar ones, even just, we're recording this shortly after Divine Mercy Sunday, and I preached about this, Jesus, I trust in you, Jesus, I trust in you. Has a little rhythm to it. But my number one is from 1 Samuel 3, is speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. That was a massive element in my discernment, and that passage was the key to my opening up my heart. So that's how I have opened up prayer. I've said that to start my holy hour probably every day for 10, 15 years. I mean, since I started doing holy hours in seminary, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. Again, say it again and again and again until you believe it. But that's been my kind of opening of my heart when I start prayer.
And both of those, I think, like, it puts the initiative, like, God is about to do something,
right,
or he's going to speak, or he's going to act. And so I'm just trying to, like, open up to that. It's not like you need to get here and you need to make sure you say your rosary.
I have work to do.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know that I have a specific prayer to start my holy hours. I should try that sometime. A lot of times I just kind of walk in, and if I could use the image, it's like coming home from work and the spouse. And so like the first 5 minutes, like, oh Lord, you won't believe the day today.
Right, right.
And I just got to get out of my system and tell the Lord. And I know he knows all of this. And usually my first five, sometimes 10, depending on the day, it can be even longer. Sometimes like, oh Lord, let's talk a moment.
Because I think this is actually worth chatting about as well. When do you do, I know when you do yours, but like, do you have a schedule of when you do it every day? Do you have a place you do every day? And do you have, where do you sit every day? Because I have, I guess, answers to all of those. Yeah. I'm interested in your guys's.
Yeah. So here at the house, we have our 4 days a week, 4 to 5 p.m. holy hours. I do that. Sunday, we have it from 11 to 12. So those are the communal. Saturday, usually I'm doing my holy hour early afternoon, 1 to 2. And then on Wednesdays, it fluctuates. That can be all over on that. But I definitely have my spot in chapels that I visit. Like, oh, I'm only here maybe once or twice a month. I've got a spot that's where I'm going to pray and that. I'm very particular about that. But yeah, I tend to be more often than not later in the day for my holy hour. So maybe that's part of my conversational start.
That's a psychopath.
Even as a pastor, I would do my whole hour here from 5 to 6. After the office closed, before evening meetings start, that's when I did my holy hour.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I'm morning. Yeah, usually before Mass, or if I see on my calendar I don't have anything in the morning, just right after Mass or after I eat or something like that. Yeah.
And that's how I am. First thing, and my first thing is different from what time your guys' first thing is. So as a college.
Yes, it's true.
As a college chaplain. But then I always have, if no one else is going to be in the chapel, I have a seat. And if people are going to be coming in out of the chapel, I have a seat. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the back of the church if people are coming in and out, because at St. Paul's, people come in at the front. Mm-hmm. And I don't like being at the front if people are going to be coming in and out a lot of the day. I just don't. I cannot concentrate. But if I'm going to be the only person in, if it's a weekend, if it's a summer, something like that, I've got my exact seat in the front row. But it's only those two places. I never prayed in any other seat in that chapel.
I used to walk a lot.
I walk. I told my
new laps.
Ben, our music director, his first weekend, it was a Saturday morning. I'm pacing. He's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, you're gonna see this a lot." It's like that's what I do when I'm been there by myself. I end up pacing a lot.
Yeah, I'm not quite as neurotic, I guess. Yeah. I move around the chapel sometimes, or yeah, maybe if I want to, there's a certain image or pray with Mary or something like that. I might sit in a certain spot, but.
And I would say probably it's normative among the priests. Morning holy hours are, I think, more common,
for
right?
Sure.
You would say that. So I do think I'm a little bit of an outlier. I'm not the only one, but I am a little bit of an outlier that I like it later in the day. So I'll come in and I'll have a little conversation with the Lord. And then posture is important to me of how I pray. And it's not, I don't know. I like the kneeler down, and I do the lazy kneel with butt on the pew. That's how I spend most of my holy hour. You know, occasionally I'll get really fervent. Maybe I'll kneel straight up, or I'll get tired and I'll sit down. But the majority of my kneeler down, butt on the pew, it's like a half. I don't know what you call, but I'm comfortable praying that way, and it's easy for me to converse with the Lord in that position. So I'm particular about that.
I'm just laughing because I remember like getting like a C or whatever it would have been in second grade on like mass participation. Cause sometimes I would do that. So yeah, all those first and second grade teachers. Now look, I'm doing it my holy hour every day. So.
And so after I do like my intro with the Lord, I usually do office of reading. So I do office of readings during the holy hour. I don't do it early in the morning. I'm not really cognitively great at that time of the day. So if there's a chance for me to actually enter into prayer with it, it's better for me later in the day. So I usually start with office of readings in there. I almost always have office of readings in my holy hour.
I'm the same way. My number one, my favorite thing to do forever has been some sort of lectio on a passage forever. And when I was young, it was on the gospel for the day. And as I've moved into the priesthood and even especially several years in the priesthood, I don't do that anymore because it was connecting preaching and pray too much. And so I'll do that at a different time outside of my holy hour now, the prep for the homily. But I was always thinking about what I was going to be preaching about. And there was, when I was a young priest, there was something really healthy about that. But as I've grown up and talking with Father Kent and spiritual direction, a lot of that, I had to move that into a different space because it was feeling too efficient. So like I have this big list of passages that I've written down on a note card. And like for Lent, I had 40 passages written on a note card. Mm. And then for everyone, I have my word on fire gospel and bring that in. And that's healthy portion of my prayer for the day. That's just what I've always found to open up a lot of discussion, conversation, frustration, hope has always been little six or seven verses from the gospel has been my favorite way to pray forever.
Yeah. I usually do Lexio after I've done office of readings. And I do it the way that I don't recommend people to do it and often told not to is I just pick a book of the Bible. I'm like, all right, I'm going to work through this, which is really not how you're supposed to do that. But it's helpful for me in prayer. Sometimes I'm surprised at the passages that come out of it. But yeah, so like right now I'm doing Psalms again and that's been wonderful. But yeah, I just pick a book and then I'll do Lexio there. And sometimes because I do mine later in the day, I've already had mass. And sometimes there's a line from that day's mass that just stuck with me. And I'll do some Lexio with that line because it's still hanging around with me, but I'm not working on a homily. I try to avoid working on homily during the holy. Occasionally that happens.
You got to do what you got to do. That's just the reality.
But yeah, more often than not, I try and resist working on the homily during the holy hour.
Yep. I agree with all that. And I like Lexio, especially it blends for me well, what you were talking about of some of that, just releasing and conversing, relating to God through the scripture passage. Cause I find if I just try to do that apart from Lexio and it can become like egocentric. Like I remember just a brief line that has stuck with me is really good for me. Anytime it's prayer is just, if you're thinking, you're not praying. So like I can be tempted to think a lot and be like, okay, this is what happened or this is what I got coming up. And then I'm like, well, I'm not sharing this with God. I'm just kind of like thinking about it and mulling in it. That's different than like I'm praying with the scriptures and this is coming up and this is something that happened, but I'm sharing that with God rather than just me sitting in it. So I think Lexio helps me to do that and just, yeah, on what it is sometimes, yeah, just going through a book like that or had something from last week that came up at mass and I want to stick with. So it's just kind of random. But
when you guys do Lexio, and for any of our listeners that may not be feel it, Lexio Divina is prayerful reading of the scriptures. traditionally, there's kind of the Benedictine approach, which is looking for a word or a phrase and being repetitive with that that sticks out to you. And then there's the more Ignatian approach, which is imaginative and putting yourself in the scene. Do you guys tend to favor more a Benedictine or Ignatian approach in your Lexio?
My spiritual director at conception told me to just have all the tools in your toolkit and then see what happens, okay. Which I like. He's like, practice. So I'll practice every time. So for example, for Lent, when I had those 40, I then had one word I would write down every on this note card that I want one word that was the word for the day, which is the more of the Benedictine, which was very helpful both on like sharpening up that Benedictine style, but then also looking back and be like, yeah, this is 3 out of 4 days. It's basically the same word mm-hmm. in wildly different passages. Mm. Okay, so this is, I can see what's going on in my heart a little more clearly. So I'll have times where I try to practice that for a time period because it's a gift, but it is a skill that you have to practice. You have to practice, particularly I've experienced Ignatian spirituality. And so I wouldn't say I favor one, but I bounce back and forth, sometimes from one day to the other or from times of my life to the other, because I love them deeply. Both of them have been transformative. I was initially formed in Benedictine at conception, which I treasure deeply. And then my spiritual directors at Kenrick were Ignatian. And so both of those have been great gifts to me.
Yeah, I'd say similar. I'd say I lean towards Benedictine mm-hmm. And just, yeah, like one word or a phrase and chewing that and sitting with that. But sometimes, especially with the Gospels, is a little easier Ignatian just to enter into one character or enter into the scene. So yeah, some of both just depends. I think I start with the Benedictine and maybe if something's not quite happening, mm-hmm. try an Ignatian. But
yeah, I tend to be predominantly Benedictine. I have to really intentionally move like, okay, I'm going to do Ignatian style today. I don't naturally move into that very often. And because I do, yeah, like I said, I do a lot of the books of the Bible, a lot of them, Lamentations, and it does not lend itself to the Ignatian form.
Right. It almost has to be the gospel.
Pretty much, yeah.
You get lucky every once in a while in the Old Testament.
There's a few Old Testament
stuff,
parts,
maybe some
Acts. But mostly gospels, which again, whenever I'm instructing someone in beginning lexio, I'm like, just start with the gospels. Right. Don't worry about the rest of you.
Right.
My spiritual director and theologist would tell me, all right, do the gospels and then do them again. He basically told me during theology, I don't want you praying with anything but the gospels.
Yeah.
There. And that's pretty much all I did lexio with for 4 years in theology were the gospels.
And that's what, when I'm working with students, I always start with the gospel a day. Yeah. And there are different ways to do it, but that has just always been the easiest way for me to express to people to enter into, I'm going to do a half hour, I'm going to do a holy hour, whatever the case might be.
Yeah. So liturgy of the hours, some lexio in there, some conversation prayer. I always try and make a point of silence,
mm-hmm.
which often feels longer than it actually is. Like, I'm going to do so many minutes of silence.
The bravest 6 minutes of my life.
Right? And just like, check the watch. Nope, that was only 25 seconds of silence. Keep going. You can do this.
It's crazy that like, I won't check my watch for 58 minutes. And then I'll check it.
Right.
I'll check
that
it
the truth?
Four times in the last 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, so for like with my holy hour, sometimes those things right there, that's enough to do the whole holy hour. Between liturgy of the hours, lexio, conversation of silence, you know, that can be 60 plus minutes depending on where things are going. And then sometimes that's 30 minutes and we're through it. What am I going to do with the rest of the time? So two of my go-tos when I feel like, okay, I'm not moving with any of those things, I always keep the last spiritual book that I read. So when I read spiritual books, I underline the parts that I like. And so when I finish them, then I put them in my spot for prayer. And so if I'm running out of something, I just flip to the next underlined thing. And so that kind of recharges. Then I'll have a conversation with the Lord or meditate upon what that passage is. So that's one of my go-tos if the holy hour is running a little dry or I'm not really engaging well. That, and then I have another habit. Occasionally, I will just kind of go out on, for lack of a better word, walkabouts, a little solo trip that's quasi-vacation, quasi-retreat, and I just don't know what's going on. You know, I have a location. I'll pack some spiritual books and some fun books and do a lot of hiking, getting in nature, and things like that. And so I've done a number of those trips, and what I do is I take my favorite photos from those trips and then the lines of scripture or liturgy of the hours or whatever spiritual reading I was doing, and I make a little booklet out of them. And so I call them Resurgam, I Will Rise Again. It actually comes from Jane Eyre. It's an epitaph on a tombstone. But so I have my Resurgam book sitting in there, volume 1, volume 2, volume 3, of different trips I've been on and things I've meditated on. So I'll open up and, oh, there's a sunset in Colorado, and there's the, you know, third antiphon from evening prayer, wait for the Lord to lead and then follow in his way, or whatever it was. And it takes me both to that mental space of that vacation retreat area, but also some things that were really impactful to me. And so I keep those in there as to kind of, and it's a good looking over salvation history for me, but also really kind of reigniting the fire. So those are kind of my two go-tos when I'm dragging maybe in holy as either first I start with the last spiritual book I did, and then I go to one of my resurgums.
Yeah, and so always keeping an eye on when am I, because I'll usually have a spiritual book back there and sometimes get to it. When am I doing spiritual reading to prime the pump? When am I reading to finish off the last 10, 15 minutes, right? Because that will happen. It's like we're just reading because it doesn't take the hard work
right.
of prayer. So that can be a temptation in spiritual books. So something, like sometimes I've tried to read some of like Jesus of Nazareth and some of Benedict's stuff in there lately. No dice. It just doesn't. It doesn't do it as much as I love those books. Those aren't. Mm-hmm. That's why Gregory the Great's kind of little short one chapter that you can read and take some time with. That's why Jose Maria Escrivá's stuff has been so helpful to me in prayer, because it's quick hitting stuff that is meant then for further delving deep and unpacking.
Jacques Philippe is like that for me too. Like you could read a page and have something to pray with all week.
So. If you get through a whole page.
Yeah.
Which he's got, if you're looking for on prayer, he's got a great book on prayer, Time for God, I think it's called.
He's got several. Thirsting for Prayer and Time for God are both really good.
I think for a while there, we were having the seminarians when they would come in read Time for God, because there's just a lot of great practical points. It's a book worth reading and sitting with. Do you guys have other practice for, like you said, kind of priming the pump when it's a little bit dry in the holy hour? Or
yeah, I'll always have a time of intercessory prayer. For the students. So that there's always a time. It's usually towards the end. That is, I'm naming students. I'm naming situations. And I'll usually, like with the pacing, I'll walk over to the Mary statue for a little bit during it. That's a pretty much a daily experience. But I'm naming particular staff members, folks, missionaries, students, and situations that I'm going to ask the Lord to take care of today.
I've not done that as much in my whole, I'll do it throughout the day, or sometimes I do it as part of night prayer. I'm always a little, I think that's an awesome thing, and I think it's just me. I can get into almost, like almost an OCD, when like, well, okay, I mentioned this person prayer, I got to keep doing them. And so it can turn like, am I remembering all my lists? And I think I did that as a kid. And so I'm always a little bit hesitant in my intercessory prayer. So, because that's a temptation or an easy thing to follow through of just, then prayer just becomes a super dry sort of listing of things. So I sometimes struggle in that role of intercessory. I think it's awesome and necessary, but it's not something that comes natural sometimes for me.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I have lists, and like, I mean, I have every kid at Margaret Mary School written out. And so it's not like I name necessarily everyone, but I almost just go over the list and almost let the Spirit lead that. And maybe I get stuck on a name and really pray for them, but go through, just the whole parish and particular situations. And that's a good releasing for me. I think that's the personal thing for me, is I want to like cling to and control and fix situations. So being able to just like name and like, okay, I have given this to you today is really helpful for me. And then, you mentioned like the silence, and I do have this experience a lot where I'll check my clock and there's just a couple minutes left. And a lot of times I'll just offer these last 3 minutes in silence for especially those people that are far from you, or they feel very dry and they feel like they can't hear you. Like, I'm going to enter into that and be with them and offer that for them. So that's kind of usually how I end, is with those two, with intercession and then some silence.
Something I've done every day, really, since I became a priest and got assigned to the cathedral, the Litany of the Sacred Heart, Padre Pio would pray every day.
I don't know that one.
Kiter, when he came home from visiting Padre Pio's grave, which is like he left as soon as I got to the cathedral for a few weeks, he was gone and came back and gave me that prayer card. And I've prayed it every day since I've been a priest, because then there's like three stanzas, and at the end you bring in your intentions. That's not really where I do as much of the intercessory prayer, but I have my main like students, parishioners, my folks, missionaries, my staff. There's a few other things that every single day that I want to offer to the Lord, that I want to know that I'm offering. And you're right about the OCD stuff. It can be like, did I mention everything? Because if I didn't, I'm sure all hell is going to break loose on these things if I didn't save the day with these. But it makes sure that like as a priest, I'm naming these particular people I'm promising to pray. I always end with that for all those who I've promised to pray to keep. If I say I'm going to pray for somebody and it's kind of gotten lost in the shuffle, things like that. But it's very short. I mean, you're just saying Our Father, Hail Mary, Glory Be three times, and then you end with the Hail Holy Queen. I love that. I love that prayer.
I don't have to look at that prayer.
That reminds me, I keep in my breviary dozen or whatever different prayers that at different times have been meaningful. So I don't go through them all the time, but occasionally, again, if it's a little bit dry, I'll open it up and, oh, there's a prayer from, you know, Thomas Merton or St. Ignatius or this or that, or the Litany of Humility, which you have to be really brave to pray and mean. So I don't do that one very often. But, you know, you got those prayers in there. And sometimes, because I don't pray them every time, I bring them out and I can just sit with that prayer. And what am I actually saying in this? And I can sit with that for a long time. So
you guys ever done rosary during Holy Hour?
I can't.
I've never. My whole priest, I pray the rosary every day. Never have I prayed it during Holy Hour.
Nope. I know people that do.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think Bishop Barron, when Barron talks about his Holy Hour, he talks about how he prays the rosary all the time during it. And I've never found that to be space for my Holy Hour. I just haven't.
Hot take. I don't like saying rosary before Mass. Like the community it is the least prayerful way for me to say the rosary. I think it's probably good and a wonderful thing. But like if I'm in preparing for Mass, I'm like, I'm just going to do my Lexio or whatever. I can't do the rosary before Mass in that community setting.
Agreed. Yeah. I know Drew's got some ticks on it.
But here's the thing. Like, so when I got to St. Paul, there was someone who they asked me like my first week, like, are you okay with this? And I said, of course, I'm not going to.
Yeah, I would
not,
never
of
stop.
Of course,
it.
But
never.
It hasn't been. And I'm always edified because I hear confessions till 9:50, 10 a.m. Mass. And I come out and they start at 9:35. So they're kind of finishing. They're maybe on the, I'm always edified when I come out of the confessional, I'm already in my alb, put on my chasuble and go out to greet. How many people are already in the church for one, but are praying the rosary together? Right. I don't know. It always it kind of pumps me up, really.
That's a great point.
Even though it's not necessarily the way that I would want to pray. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fabulous point. But yeah, I'm like, I would, during Holy Hour, rosary. You know, I do daily rosary, daily chaplet, but never in the Holy Hour.
My favorite tradition is with that is at the St. Louis Cathedral, one of the seminarians was always assigned to start the rosary 15 minutes before all major big confirmation events, because otherwise it would be like a frat party. I mean, you just massive confirmation or a rite of election or something like that with maybe a lot of people who aren't used to it or seen old friends or confused and things like that. So they'd go pray the rosary to like quiet everyone down.
And it works.
It did. It always works.
Best way to silence a Catholic crowd anytime.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and of the Holy
Instantly,
Spirit.
Everyone
Amen.
Shuts up. It's the grace of God at work there. Well, now that you have some ideas on how to pray your Holy Hour, go and do it. As Father Garrett said in the beginning, that's the most important thing. Whether you use these techniques or you use other things, or if you're saying your rosary, you're reading, first and most important thing is get out there and do it. Start praying. Get yourself before the Lord. And that's where we will leave it for today. So, thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. The final word today goes to Father Drew.
This is from St. Gregory the Great in that pastoral care we've been talking about. A preacher should speak more by his deeds than by his words, and leave an imprint of footsteps for others to follow by good living, rather than merely pointing out the way by speaking.
See you next week.